My name is Greg Johnson, and it's the 5th of April, 2016, and this is Mr. Nick Kuchar, and he's going to talk about his time in Athabasca.
Yeah. I'm going to start with what my dad was always inclined to move, immigrate somewhere. So when the news came out in the Ukraine that Canada's accepting immigrants and Argentina is. So my dad, he applied to Argentina. He said it was a warmer country. But when he came home and mother says to him, he says, well, some of the neighbors are moving to Canada, not Argentina, and you applied for Argentina. She'd like to move with the neighbors. Oh, that says, okay, I can change the country. So he changed the country, and we came to Canada instead of Argentina. And there was at least two families that came at the same time from that village. And then on the boat as we were crossing, we met up with some more families that came from the neighboring villages. And mother knew some of those people and dad. So there was nine families in all immigrated. They didn't come on the same ship, though. Some went on another ship. And we were 9 days out in the ocean, and dad got sick, of course, seasick, and all that, and mother said I had a hard time to walk on that ship because it was tossing too much.
So do you remember where you landed in Canada?
We landed in St. John, New Brunswick. And when I was in New Brunswick, I tried to look that up, and I found a place where the immigrants landed, and all the names were there, but I couldn't find ours. But anyway, the birth certificate says that we landed in St. John's. And from St. John, I guess we moved to Montreal temporarily. And then from Montreal, we started going west. We were going to the farming country of the prairies, and which was, Alberta was the main destiny.
Was there any particular reason why Alberta?
Well, Manitoba was pretty well filled up already.
Okay.
But, and maybe even Saskatchewan. So they said Alberta. So we came, started going towards Alberta, and just a few miles before Winnipeg, my brother fell off the train. So there's a problem. Dad tried to stop the train to look for him. But the conductor said, well, we're not going to stop now till we get to Winnipeg. It's only a few miles. So they stopped in Winnipeg, and the authorities started phoning around, and what are you going to do at night? This was at night.
What time of year? Do you remember?
In April.
Okay.
But they phoned the section people that work on the railroad, you know, they got on their vehicle and started going on the railroad, and here they see a boy sitting on the rock crying. So that phoned up right away, and I don't know how he got to Winnipeg, that I don't know. But he had a big gash, so they put him in the hospital, and we were delayed a week in Winnipeg waiting for him to recover. And then he came out, and that's the picture they took.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it was in Winnipeg or already in Edmonton.
So from Winnipeg you came straight to Edmonton?
To Edmonton, yeah. Okay. And in Edmonton they said, yeah, there's land in Athabasca or Peace River. You have a choice. And Dad, I don't know how he he questioned some people and says, all the good land of Athabasca is gone already. You'd have to go to Peace River to get better land. So my dad goes to Peace River, files for a half section of land there, good land. They come home, mother again balls him out. He says, all the neighbors that were coming with us, they took land around Athabasca. How come you want to go to Peace River? I want to settle down with the neighbors. Oh, okay. So he went to the land office here and crossed the numbers in that and put a new number on. It was still not too late to change over. So he got the land there, probably the poorest quarter in the country.
Whereabouts was that at? Do you remember?
Where I lived all my life. Northwest of here, 20 miles.
Okay. Out by Chain Lake area?
Yeah. On the road to Chain Lake. Okay. Yeah. We moved in there with all these families from our area. There was 9 families in all. So we stayed in the immigration hall here for, I don't know for how many days. And then we moved into one farmer moved out. I don't know what happened to him. And he had good buildings there, a house and barn and chicken coop and all that. So we all moved into that farm. Two or three families moved into the house, and we and another two families moved into the chicken coop, and the rest moved into the barn. And we stayed there, and then Dad took this quarter that wasn't too far from there, maybe three miles, but far enough. So him and I think it was 1, 2, 3 guys says, we'll help you build, and then when we build your house, you help us build ours. So, okay, a good deal. So they walked that three miles. There was no road to that homestead yet. And they start building that house. And I remember these three guys that helped Dad. They were staying under a spruce tree and made a tent.
No electricity, no running water.
No, not yet. Yeah. Oh, that never came to that area, maybe 20 years later.
Okay.
Then they're building the house and they finished building it. So then the next farmer, that was Harry Waschuk's dad, says it's my turn for my house now. Okay. So they went to build his house and they built it. And the third guy was single. The two guys, they were both single. So they said, we don't worry about the house. You pay us a little bit wages. And I don't know what I'm going to do. He couldn't find a good quarter anyway. So they never took. And this one guy went back to the old country. And he came back 10 years later. During the war, he brought his family this time. So we lived that in there, and I remember moving in there for the winter. And I was about 2 years old then, so I wanted to go outside. Mother says, where are you going to go outside? And the snow was 4 feet deep. Where are you going to go? The snow was deeper than I was tall. But by spring, she said, I'll let you out when the sun comes out. She let me out, and I remember playing in front of that house in my shoes. I had 2 pairs of shoes. Okay. They were my horses already, and I'm playing. So that's the first memory I have of living there.
So the first year, did you plant any crops or anything?
No.
There was nothing, no land.
It's all bush.
Okay.
Everybody took a homestead there.
So what did you eat?
Search me.
Okay.
Search me, I don't know. But anyway, they moved into that house. And by spring, then they start clearing, and Dad cleared enough land from that bush, about 1 acre, to make a garden. And my neighbor, he came from Scotland, our closest neighbor. He came from Scotland, and he was given $700 for immigration payment. See, this Canada was a British subject, so that they paid their immigrants $700 to move to Canada, and of course us Ukrainians didn't get anything. So this Scotchman, he with that $700, he bought first thing a tractor, a car, and a breaking plow, all for $700. So first thing we hired him to break that 1 acre we cleared. And I remember when he was breaking it. So after that, we had a garden, I guess maybe that same year yet. He broke it early in the spring, so they must have used it that same year. And after that, Dad was clearing more land, and he took half a section there. One quarter was my half-brother, that John Bostick's father. So there was a half section there. They both start clearing land, but there's no money. You had to buy some kind of food with some money. But Dad had, I guess, quite a bit of money from the old country, because my neighbor told me, he said, your dad was rich when he came. But he said, like me, I only had $200 when I came there. And my dad apparently had $1,000. So, but anyway, we got to go working out someplace. So Dad started working for people, farmers that have settled there nearby. They were there already for 10 years and they were getting well off. They could afford to hire a man, and he worked for them 50 cents a day. And you had to clear brush for them. Work hard, sweat, boy, for 50 cents. And my dad worked for one Frenchman that was there maybe 10 or 15 years. And he said, you know, Dad says, well, I already been working for you for 2 or 3 months. Couldn't you pay me something now? And the man says, I'd like to pay you, but I haven't got no money. So he says, but you can take pigs. I got pigs. You take pigs for that. Okay, that settled for that. He gave him, I forget, 6 wiener pigs. So then we had a chance to start pigs. We kept one for sow and one for boar. And the rest we butchered when they grew up. And then, what was the next step? They used to go out working, catch the freight train in Athabasca to go south to look for work. You had to go at least as far as Ligel, or as far as Clyde, I should say. The farmers around Clyde, and then they were well off already. So Dad used to go there harvesting every year after that. And you had to walk. If you missed the freight train, you wasn't able to get on it, then you had to walk. So they walked on the railroad track. And it took them 2 days to get to the Ligel by walking. Usually slept in a haystack someplace in the Rochester area. And later, Dad bought the horses. I remember he was gone, and you couldn't find no horses around our area. So he went to Edmonton, to Strathcona, and in that barn there was lots of horses for sale. So he bought a nice team of black horses.
What year would this have been, roughly, do you remember?
It would have been maybe 1931, because we came in 1929, and next year would have been 30, so probably after a year or so he went after those horses. And he bought this nice team of black horses. He came and parked them in front of the house and says to mother, come out, I bought a goat. Come and see my goat, he says. He's joking, you know. And a week or two later, he went again for horses. He's going to buy a team for his stepson. He bought him that quarter, and the quarters were sold that time for $10. And so he went to Strathcona again, and he bought another team of horses, this time grays, perch and grays. So we had four horses, and we were... And then he sent for a... to buy a wagon. You couldn't find any wagons. So he got one out of the Eaton's catalog, a new wagon that came, and he had a team of horses and a wagon to go to town with. So this was quite a regular trip. He used to come to town. Neighbors never had no horses, nothing yet. So they all hopped on too, you know, when Dad went to town.
And that would have been an all-day trip, pretty much.
Oh, long day. 20 miles we were from Athabasca. So it took you 3 or 4 hours to get to Athabasca, and 3 or 4 hours back, that's 8 hours, and you spend 2 or 3 hours in town. So you started out when it was dark, and you came home when it was dark, whether it was summer or winter. And then I remember he made a homemade sleigh for the horses.
It was for wintertime.
Yeah. He found a tree with a root on it, and it was curd off like this. Big one. So when he brought wheat to the elevator, he says, "There comes a streetcar." They were laughing for my dad.
So did you start growing wheat then, fairly early, or?
Well, how many acres we had? We cleared maybe 10 acres after a few years. 10 acres, and then we could start growing wheat and barley and oats. Yeah, so we had to grow oats for green feed for the horses. And we made hay by a lake that wasn't far from our place. That lake had lots of wild grass. So all the neighbors made hay around that lake. And of course, they bought horses too by that time.
And all the clearing of the land was all done by hand?
By hand. My main job when I went to school, I was only 10 years old, was to chop brush, and that says make sure you chop one pile every day. So I was chopping, my sister was piling, she was only 7. And we chop a pile every day, and we got land that way. And, that plowed. That land was a walking plow with 2 horses. I remember he let me try plowing it with it. So the handlebars were just above my head, yet I was small. And it was just before that or after that, he was plowing a rock, hit that plow, and those bars hit him in the ribs, and it broke a rib. So he was complained after that a while. And later on, they start building a school. The immigrants, those Ukrainian immigrants, and a few English immigrants that were there too at the same time, they start building a school, and they named the school Larwood District, named after a town in Scotland. This Scotch guy that had the tractor, he's the one that named it. And George, one of the neighbors, Jimmy's grandfather was the contractor for that school. And my dad had horses, so he's the one that skidded the logs for it out of the bush. And the rest of them, they built the school. We started school, I think it was 1932, but not I was too young yet. My brother started, and I think the school had 26 children, so there was enough to send a teacher. The teacher was English, her name was Mrs. Kapke, and she had an awful time with the children. None of them could speak English. And already me, when I went a couple of years later, I guess, or 3 years later, that teacher was gone, there was another one.
What grade did they go up to in the school? Do you remember?
Up to grade 9. That's what I had.
Okay.
Finished grade 8, and there was no more school for grade 9, so I had to go to Athabasca.
Unless you came into town here.
Yeah.
Okay.
So some people that had lots of money, they sent their children to Athabasca, got a rooming house someplace, and they stayed, but...
Well, there was the Bishop Young hostel, youth hostel down there.
Yeah. Anglican hostel. Some of them stayed there. But like Stan Burtis, he lived across the river only 3 miles, so he said that he walked to Athabasca to school. All those people from across the river, they came about the same time as us, and they were immigrants too.
So did you come into town to go to high school? Or?
No, no. My mother says we don't have enough money to pay for rent of a building. Well, when I finished my school, grade 8, and I says to mother, well, she always wanted me to be a teacher. She says, my brother Leon says he's going to be the farmer and you're going to be the teacher, because Leon is bigger than you. He's stronger. And he says, and you're small. He says, the teacher is good for you. Okay, so when I finished school, I says to mother, well, give me the money. I want to go to be a teacher already to school in Athabasca. And she says, you got no money. And then 2 years later, my sister was born. So she was the Canadian already. She was born here. And we walked 2.5 miles to school every day. And usually barefooted in the summertime, because we were so poor, they had no money to buy shoes. I remember it snowed on Halloween time one time, and we were still in the school and walking barefooted home on the snow.
I saw a picture of a tractor there. Do you remember when you moved horses?
I think I was 14 or 15 years, 15 maybe, when I was in that. So I was already... No, I might have been even more than 15. My brother was working out already, and I started working. And Dad had some money, so we joined hands together and bought that tractor. Yeah, and it was an old hard part tractor.
Pardon me?
Hard part, they called it.
Hard part. Okay.
Yeah, it was an Oliver company, and we bought it from a farmer across the river that was already farming for quite a few years. So I remember we broke a lot of land with that tractor. It took 3 guys to run it, though. That steering on that tractor was so loose that you had to make one round before it catch. And then back again, around before it catch. So you kept busy turning that wheel all the time. So my brother was driving it, and my dad was kicking the roots off from the coulter, so the plow wouldn't plug. And I was walking behind, stepping on the furrow so it wouldn't fall back. That's how we broke land them days. And we broke quite a bit with that tractor. Then... later, during the war years, Dad wanted to get a better tractor, a new one. So he applied for Oliver. He applied International, and they said they couldn't get it. So they're not making tractors no more. They're making war machinery instead, those factories. So my dad, there was a man from Saskatchewan came to Athabasca, and he's selling homemade tractors. They were called the Rocco. And my dad saw that, he bought the Rocco. Bought the Rocco, I still got it on the farm there and on display. During those hungry 30s from 1920 29 to what was it, 36? Depression lasted?
Or even a little bit later, actually, depending on where you were.
For 10 years, I think.
Yeah, right up to the start of the war.
So we had to go to that went threshing up north, up south, and made enough money to live throughout the year. And they only paid something like a dollar a day for threshing. It was already higher than 50 cents. And for the winter, the neighbors were going to hew ties for the railroad. He make ties. Right. He had to hew them with a broadaxe then right. days. So like my half-brother, that's what he done every winter. But my dad says he didn't go. He went, I think, one day, and his back got sore.
Yeah, okay.
So he didn't go no more.
Did the farm become more and more self-sufficient as time went on, or?
Yeah, you got bigger, more land, bigger, and improved some more, and you got a lot of that money from working out.
So in terms of, I think you were doing mixed farming mostly.
Yeah.
We
bought our first cow, I remember, from a neighbor that was there already for 10 years probably. And he had cattle, so we went and bought a cow, black cow. And we milked her for years. And our neighbors never had no cows yet. So when my sister was born, we had milk for the baby. But when the neighbor's girls, same age as my sister, were born, twins, they had no cow and no milk. So my mother used to give them milk from our cow.
So the neighbors tended to help each other out quite a bit?
Yeah.
So what sorts of, you told me you were doing barley and oats and some wheat.
Yeah.
And then you had some pigs.
Yeah.
Did you get into anything else? The cattle or?
We got that cow, and after that, that cow had calves, and that, so pretty soon we had a few cows. And then later on, my dad bought a Holstein cow. I don't know where he said, a milk cow. So we're going to milk cows. So after that, we milked cows there. I remember we milked about as high as 10 cows. And I had to milk 3 cows. My mother milked 4, and my dad milked 3. Mother could milk better than me or dad.
Yeah. It was all by hand in those days.
Yeah. So you that's what we lived off of, that cream. We bought a separator and separated the cream. And you shipped that cream to Athabasca. Athabasca had a creamery, so you had to take it by horses there. You got $5 for that cream can of cream. And that was enough to buy groceries for that week. Yeah, that's what most of the farmers lived off of them days.
So do you remember when the first truck came along?
Yeah, the first truck. First car that was bought in our district from these immigrants was our neighbor's. There was a boy in there, he was already 18 or 20, and he was working out, and he was able to buy a car. So when they bought a car, my brother, he couldn't stand it no longer, that we don't have one. So he was working out too, and he says, well, he has enough money now to buy a truck. But he's asking me, he says, you put your money in there and we'll buy a truck. So we went, a neighbor over here about 10 miles west, he was selling his truck, and 1 ton international. It was a good looking truck, so we went there and bought it. And then from our district, we were the ones that hauling cream for everybody on that truck to Athabasca. And Harry's family bought a small vehicle too, but it was like a Model T Ford, that kind that was made into a truck from a car. So they drove it too, but it was a truck that you couldn't depend on much, very much. You could break down the road someplace. But when we bought this truck, we were able to go to town and quite happy. And then people were catching rides, and my brother wasn't charging anything. So the neighbor says, "We're riding with you all the time. We'll be paying you 50 cents from now on each trip." So that's what they done.
So was it just like trails that were coming into town? There was no roads, or was there any
poor
roads?
Poor road, no, not gravel road.
Right, right.
The last half mile to our place there, it was like that crooked, I remember. And, at one point there, the people were so poor there that they went on relief. They heard that the municipality in Athabasca will pay relief to people who's poor enough.
This is in the 30s?
Yeah.
Okay.
So Harry's dad, he was so poor that one time he came to our place and he was crying. And mother says, "What you crying, Jack?" "Oh," he says, "the wife used the last of the flour to make bread, and I don't know where I'm going to get the next sack." So he's crying about it. Mother says, "Well, don't cry. I'll give you some flour." So she gave him, and he went back. But then he heard about this relief. He went and applied, and the government, the municipality, gave $8 a month. And then pretty soon another family applied, another family. They heard from one another. Pretty soon my dad applied, but he only got $6. But the reason for that, because we had less kids.
Okay.
We only had 4 kids, and Washington had, I think, 8. So, you went to town, and for that $6 you could buy a sack of flour, $3, 20 pounds of rolled oats, and 10 pounds of sugar, and a package of salt. And yeah, that's all that was needed for a farmer, they said. You don't need any more food than that. So we got that. And then we set a fire in our place, and it burnt out. And I forget, it was next year or so, the blueberries came so heavy that my mother was picking blueberries every day with us kids. And we lived off of that. Dad, he went to work out for 50 cents a day, and my mother picked blueberries, and she made all of that, if not more. They only paid 5 cents a pound for blueberries in town. So if you picked 20 pounds, which you, at that time a woman could, 20 pounds times 5, you got a dollar, and Dad only got 50 cents. And I remember catching a ride with Harry Washchuk's father to sell those blueberries to Athabasca. And I brought them to where they were buying them, and I thought they were going to give me cash. "No," she said, "you got to take groceries."
"Oh, really?"
They wouldn't give cash. And I said, "Well, okay, I'll take groceries. I want that and that." She said, "Well, we haven't got it." "So what do you do then?" Mother told me to buy some sealers so we can can some blueberries. And I said, "I'll take sealers if you have." She says, "We don't have any." Well, so I had to go to another store, but I sold a pail of blueberries to the Chinaman here, cafe, and he gave me something like 15 cents a pound. So with that money, and I begged this store lady to give me 10 cents so I could buy the sealers in another store. She gave me. So I bought those sealers, and I took groceries that we didn't really need, but I had to spend that money anyway.
So Nick, after the war, and especially in the 1950s, did times start getting a little bit better? Did you notice anything like that?
During the war that the times started getting better. Oh, yeah. that war brought prosperity to the poor around here. I don't know, probably elsewhere too. There was jobs starting to get. The Americans were coming to build the Alaska Highway. Some guy got a job on that highway, and they paid wages something like $3 a day during the war. And the one guy that, his name was Nick Filipchuk, he managed to buy a truck somehow, and he was hauling something for the Americans in Alaska there with that truck. And not only that, but he took moonshine, he made moonshine. He took moonshine to sell it to the Americans, and he made more money than that moonshine than anything, they said. So he became quite prosperous. He opened up a John Deere dealership here later, and then he was still making moonshine, and he lost his dealership because of that. Yeah, so his boy took it over, and his boy is the one that was at that John Deere dealership there up till here lately.
Do you have any recollections of things like community dances or special celebrations?
Yeah. Well, once we had the Larwood School, the teacher made the Christmas concert every year. So they gave the candy and for the kids. And then after the concert, they had a dance. And there was music supplied by some people not too far away. There was those Indians from west of Baptist Lake. They used to come to play. They're good musicians.
Be like a fiddle and a guitar.
Fiddle and guitar mainly. And then my half brother got married. That would have been still in the 30s, I think. So the neighbor says, "I'll get you the musicians." So he walked across the river from our place. He had to cross the river on the ice. Went across the river. He knew people there that were musicians. He brought them, and I remember they played for that wedding.
And so when you started farming full-time, did you ever have to work out, or did you?
I did some, yeah. Not that much. When I was start farming, there was almost enough to live on that farm. But the county was given to chop brush, you know, along the road in the ditches. So I took a job chopping brush, and then lots of other farmers. So I was getting some supplement from that. And when I was young, before I was married, I worked for 12 winters in sawmills, handling lumber, or fallen trees. Me and my brother were good at fallen trees. We'd take a contract and fall 10 cents a log. So it gave us about, we'd average about 100 logs a day. We'd get $10, $5 a piece. And if you worked at the mill, they only paid $4. Yeah. Thought we gained a little bit.
But basically a lifetime of very hard work, it sounds like.
It is hard work.
Yeah.
So one winter me and Harry Washer, we went west to Edson. It says, oh, they're sawing ties there. It might be easier work than lumber. We went there and the work was even harder. Pack those ties on your shoulder, and they weighed at least 100 pounds each. Boy, I remember my shoulder got a sore on it from those pack of those ties. So when Christmas time came, we went home and I went back.
So where did you meet your spouse?
Do
you remember?
We used to go to dances, different areas around Athabasca. And went one time to Collington. Oh, this was their action. And that's where I met her. So I was already 28, I guess, or 27. So I thought it's time to get married. So I got serious, and we got married in her area. In her house was the wedding, and I had a dance in the Perryville Community Center. My wife comes from Perryville, but the girls we had in our district all left us. Went to the city, including my sister. So I had to go look for girls someplace else. Oh, and I might as well tell you this too. My dad was a Christian from the old country. He went to Bible school there. And when he came to Canada, he wasn't able to meet up with any Christians. So he decided he'd make some. So he started preaching around the country, and he all over around Athabasca, and he established a church in the Coolidge area. And that's where we used to go to church, that far, 30 miles with horses.
Every Sunday?
No, just maybe once a month or less. He used to go with horses, preaching all over the country. And then later on, there was another Englishman that was doing the same thing. So he came to our place. He says, why don't you and I preach together? He says, well, we come to an English family, I'll preach. When we come to a Ukrainian family, you preach. That says, all right, except one thing. He says, I got no bicycle like you have. Oh, he says, I'll get you one. So I don't know where he got it, from somewhere. Brand new one. It came from Simpson Sears, I think. So they used to go together with bicycles later on, preaching.
But most of the people who were around this area, Was it fairly mixed, or was it like, I mean, it sounds like there's a lot of Ukrainians and a lot of English.
There was all nationalities, but they said that a third of the population around Athabasca was Ukrainian, and two-thirds was something else. In English, there wasn't that many English. A lot of them were French, Irish, Scotch, like our direction. There was only Howard Stafford. He was English, and he came to that area something like maybe 15 years earlier than we did. And they were already established, so my dad used to work for him. That Kenny Stafford, he's still there. He's got that feedlot there.
Okay.
You heard of it or not? But now he wants to sell. He's got enough land there and feedlot and everything that he wants. $8 million, I heard.
And so what's, if you were thinking about the changes that you've seen in this area over the last 50 or 60 years or more, is there anything that really strikes you?
Well, there was changes as the years went by, from the Depression years where people were so poor that mother used to cry. But as the years went by, we got richer and richer and richer. We weren't richer anything,
right.
We're getting richer. Richer, and already when we got the tractor, then we quit using horses so much. And at one point, the alfalfa started growing good in this area. They bought the seed from it, and they paid something like 50 cents a pound. So my dad got rich overnight. He had 5 acres of wheat. No, he had 5 acres of this alfalfa, and we threshed it, and we got $1,000 out of the seed. So that was big money for them farmers,
right,
them days. So he seeded 20 more acres, and he got 2,000. Then 2,000 or 3,000 the next year. And then he bought a new threshing machine and this Rockel tractor, and so we were well off. We weren't suffering. And now I gave my farm over to my boy. I sold it to him cheap, like, you know. And he's expanding way bigger than me. The machinery I left him wasn't good enough. He's buying bigger machinery and newer. So what I left him, he don't appreciate it much. But he's getting better. He had a tremendous amount of canola last 2-3 years. Like, they pay $10 a bushel for canola, and if you get 40 bushel to the acre like he did last year, that's $400 a bushel an acre, $400 an acre. And if you have 1,000 acres, how much does that give you? Big money. But it costs a lot to put it in, though, because the government or whoever made that kind of a deal that you can't seed your own seed. If they catch you do it, they put you to jail. So you have to buy the seed from them, and they charge you something like $10 a pound for that seed. You sell it for $10 a bushel, and they charge you $10 a pound for buying it from them. But the boy does it, says it still pays.
So is there anything else you'd like to talk about?
I went to the old country. It was an interesting trip for me to see my relatives there and my half-sister. See, my half-brother came with my dad to Canada, but he left a sister that was married there already. So I went to see her in 1988, and she showed me the house where I was born. It was interesting. And she, of course, she built a new house already, or maybe the third house. And she had four girls and one boy. So I visited with the girls a day with each girl, or maybe a little more, because I stayed in the hotel for the night. Just went to see them in the daytime. So it was like that. I don't know, they all wanted to come to Canada. I thought to myself, well, maybe I could afford to bring one, but not all of them.
Right.
So
right.
I didn't bring none of them.
How are they doing now?
They're still okay. They weren't really suffering there when I was. The jobs were scarce too. They're like they are here. And some of the jobs, one of the nieces was working in a dairy, so she says they don't pay her no more, no wages. But she says she still goes to work there anyway, and she brings cream home, so that's better than nothing. So I wrote something here that I didn't say, I think.
Okay, what's that?
Well, I was going to the school. There was no road to the school yet when they first built it. So there's a creek there that we had to cross. And at flood time in the spring, the creek got so high that it took that bridge away. And then how did you get to school? But there was a tree fell down across the creek. So we had to cross that creek. And it was dangerous as for a kid. Could fall in that creek and that's it. So I think I wrote that in here somewhere.
I'm going to assume schooling was very heavily oriented towards English and Anglo.
Well, everything was in English, yeah.
Right.
But, we still spoke Ukrainian because we didn't know how to speak English. And the teachers, once in a while, would bawl us out and say, why don't you speak English? You'll learn it faster.
Okay.
Yeah. And, my kids, well, they're all married now too. Maybe you want to know about them. When I got married, we had 5 kids. This is the wedding picture of this girl here, mm-hmm. the oldest one. I think it was the day of the wedding this was taken. And that's the second one, third one, fourth one, and that's the boy that's farming.
Four girls and one boy.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's okay. This oldest girl married a boy where she met him in Edmonton, I think. She was working at a bank teller. She was a teller at the bank. And she met this customer and they married her. And then the second girl, she was going to school here in Athabasca, and one of the boys that was in her grade or a grade older, I think, she knew him right along, so she married him after. And the third one met a man in Edmonton. He works for the John Deere, and his name is Johnson, like yours. He's still there. He's probably second in command there in the John Deere already. So he married, and they have 2 kids. And this one here, the smallest one, she met a boy in Edmonton too. And she married him, and they have 3 kids. And this boy, he met a girl in Athabasca here. It was second hand already. She had a baby. So he married her and had 2 more children with her. So they have 3 kids there now.
And he's the only one who stayed behind.
Yeah. Well, he wasn't too good in school. Like, the girls were pretty good, but not him. So he wanted to farm. He was more mechanically inclined.
Right,
you know?
Okay.
Like, the girls were interested in horses, but not him. He wanted a quad. So that's how it goes. This here, that's my stepbrother, you see?
Mm-hmm.
And then it's me and my brother.
One question here that's kind of interesting is what advice would you give to your grandchildren's generation?
Oh, well, in my opinion, my folks were Christian, you see, and they taught us how to be a Christian, and as far as they were concerned, that was the only way to live, is a Christian way. So I preach that to my kids, and they're all Christian, except this one here. She's a little bit dragging her feet. And so I say the same thing to the grandchildren. And the grandchildren, this one's here, she has 4 children. 2 of them went to Bible school in Edmonton. And the two oldest girl married preachers, and then this one, her husband became a Christian after he married her. So it's rubbing off on the kids pretty good from me, you know, see. And this boy too, he was dragging his feet too, but when he married, I don't think he was a Christian when he was married. Got married, but his wife was a Seventh Day Adventist, so she wanted him to go her way. He said, "Oh no, he couldn't do it." So he went my way then, because of that. But he still wouldn't go. He doesn't want to go to my church. He went to my church till he got married, and after he got married, they both decided they're going to go to the Reformed Church. They, him and her, his wife and the children, to go to the Reformed Church now. Mm. And I go to the missionary church, and the wife and this girl here and her family goes to the missionary church in Edmonton, and this one here doesn't go to church. That's why I'm saying she's dragging her feet. And her husband, he'd become a Christian. He says, if Sally would, if she would, so she doesn't want to, so he doesn't want to. And the grandchildren, this one's two children, went to Bible school, and one went for 4 years, so she's qualified like a preacher too now. And her sister only went 1 year, I think. And this girl's two girls, they went to Bible school 2 years, 1 year apiece. And her boy, he went to Bible school too. And that's all, yeah.
Okay, well, thank you very much.